go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are off and running on yet another live adventure on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that is where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap, wacky, zany, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that is the horn chat room. Yes, indeed. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and BT Bomb and longtime and veteran indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a spacing guild master has folded space to become Man Cave, as he often does this time of year. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know 16K only on TuneIn, but otherwise golden over on the headon.live stream. So we got that going for us, which is good. Hi! I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the last broadcast before before Christmas. Of course, there will be, I remind everyone, we will be probably one of the very few progressive broadcasters live on Christmas Day or Christmas night, but we will be here. We most assuredly will be here for Christmas on the front porch, on the horn, Monday evening. It is, in fact, the 22nd day of December, 2017. And it's Friday on the front porch. That means that in about an hour's time, if you've never done it before, you need to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that takes place at the end of every week and provides for some rousing conversation. And seriously, this is... Oh, I don't know. Think of this as the wassail edition of Friday on the front porch. And speaking of wassail, I've got a question for you. Is the holiday season wearing you out? Is it grinding you down? Isn't it, is it taking a toll? Yes. Well, lucky for you, the hardworking peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals have come up with something they've never essayed before. You know, most of what they do, it comes in capsule form, but this time... Since we're going to try it here in West Virginia in a couple of years with medical cannabis, which isn't really cannabis, it's some sort of chemical preparation based on it. Well, we have a tincture for you this evening from Horn Nutraceuticals. That's right, wainscoted wassail only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Wainscoted wassail. Well, golly gee, it'll perk you up. It'll put a spring in your step, a twinkle in your eye. And if you're lucky, it won't put an ulcer in your gut. Wainscoted wassail is a proprietary blend of herbs and spices and some really, really bad moonshine that we got hold of from a guy we know. And it comes in at about 180 proof. So you want to be careful with it. But a couple of teaspoons of this and, well, the next thing you know, you'll just be wandering along behind the little animals. Yes, indeed. Wainscoted wassail from Horn Nutraceuticals. I've never much cared for wassail myself. But you know what? With wainscoted wassail, a couple of teaspoons and, well, I don't care. But just like with anything that comes in capsule forms, we want you to feel secure in the knowledge of what you're getting from Horn Nutraceuticals. And so consequently, if you order a 3-month supply of wainscoted wassail, well, doggone it, we will send you a little bundle of test strips that you can dip in your wainscoted wassail and find out that it has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. But we will also warn you that you should probably not operate heavy machinery when taking wainscoted wassail, because while it is, in fact, another bullshit nutritional supplement from Horn Nutraceuticals, because you can't be a real radio broadcast unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. Well, the local constabulary might not approve of you toddling down the highway with a couple of ounces of wainscoted wassail burbling along in your belly. Yes, and that's right, that 3-month supply will only set you back $272.19. Wainscoted wassail is produced through a proprietary practice known only to old fellas with really long beards and overalls who live up hollers and have a fondness for shotguns and various hunting rifles. Yes, wainscoted wassail from Horn Nutraceuticals. Cruelty-free, vegan, free-range, non-GMO, especially the corn part, gluten-free, and damn sure to set you free. Wainscoted wassail from Horn Nutraceuticals. Accept no substitutes. Operators are not standing by. FOB, COD, use no hooks, this side up, belly side down, 10-4, good buddy. Wainscoted wassail from Horn Nutraceuticals. Yes. So that gets that part out of the way. But we are not completely done, because we are in the midst of something we have never experienced here before. Thanks to the goodly efforts of a number of people a few nights ago, we are in the midst of a fundraising-free close of 2017. And that means that all we got to do this evening is send out thanks. And thanks, in fact, do go out to Sylvia in California. Thank you, Sylvia. Thanks go out to Gail in Nebraska. And thanks go out to Michael, for whom I do not have an address. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks also going out to Tom. Thank you, Tom, very much for being a partial sponsor of this evening's program. And thanks to two brand new subscribers. Thanks to Bill. And thanks for re-upping to Kenda. Thank you, Kenda and Bill. Thank you very kindly indeed. And program reminder again, Christmas on the front porch on Monday. Then on Tuesday, a shortened program, 2 hours only. And also on Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'll be filling in for our buddy and my personal hero, Mike Malloy. I'm not saying that ironically. He really is a hero to me. As he and Kathy and not so little anymore Miss Molly return home from a Christmas break. Damn it, Arthur! Quit giving things away. And Arthur with a note. Hey, why does this horn wassail just have a horn sticker on top of the Sam's Club label? Damn it, it wasn't supposed to be a Sam's Club label. It was supposed to be a Costco label. We don't have any around here, so I guess they did the best they could. But that's okay. You know, if you're worried, in addition to the test strips, if you're worried about the quality of your wainscoted wassail, you can pour a little bit out on your countertop and light it, and it should burn blue. If it doesn't burn blue, I wouldn't use it, but it should burn blue. That's what the boys up the holler told me, at least. And Steve, somewhere in far frozen Ottawa, asks, will it bonerize me even in the frozen north? It will bonerize you all the way down to your toenails, especially in the far frozen north, Steve. Absolutely. Subject line coming from Ron in Raleigh. I think you need this. I don't know how you'd wainscot it, but here you go. And it is, of course, a wassail recipe. Wassail, of course, is an old English word that goes back to when people ended every English word with an E and pronounced it like vata prilla with a jour zute. And wassail, according to the recipe kindly provided to me by Ron in Raleigh, calls for apple cider, orange juice, lemon juice, cinnamon sticks, ground ginger, ground nutmeg, and, well, like I said, the boys up the holler add a little something special to give it that extra wainscoting. Yes. The recipe is, of course, secret. And Ron, I'm just telling you now, Billable Rick really does. I guess he's just feeling his oats here at the end of the year, and wants to engage in a little discovery and paperwork action with the boys over at Dewey, Cheatham and Howe, because he's getting perilously close to gimmick infringement. Bob. The hell's a wainscoted wassail? Is it a Latin term? Is it in Black's Law Dictionary? No, it's something only people who probably ought to be going to meetings every now and again, that meetings that begin with "Hi, I'm," make. But it's holiday cheer from a long, long, long time back. And so here we are. Here we are at the last program before Christmas. I'll be tuning in to Malloy tonight, just in hopes of perpetuating the ancient holiday tradition. And I would never play it because the ancient holiday tradition of listening to Malloy introduce "Oh Holy Nightmare." Mm-hmm. Silent R. Lamar says, "Sound like Grandpa, dude." Hey, well, you know, you get enough wainscoted wassail under you, and by Jiminy, you probably will too. So, enjoy your holiday weekend. It's going to be very, very quiet around here. I don't get to be reunited with my lovely bride until sometime Monday afternoon. So we'll come. We'll get back home, and I'll be home in plenty of time to do Christmas on the front porch. And I don't know. Maybe a big New Year's feast or something, because there will not be a program on New Year's Day. I don't observe a lot of religious malarkey or hokum or bunkum or mumbo jumbo. But by God, I'm gonna watch me some college football on New Damn Year's Day. And so maybe, I don't know. Ooh, you know what? You know what? Who doesn't love corned beef and cabbage on New Year's Day? What if said corned beef was actually a smoked brisket of beef with tenderly kissed by hickory smoke through the course of the day? Quick! Let's look at the Magic Weather app and see if we've got any hope for that. Hey, 27 degrees. It's going to be a little brisk outside, but you know what? I may take the risk, because I don't know who did this, but I thank you very kindly for doing it. UPS guy dropped something off today. And I am now the proud owner of a very, very warm piece of Patagonia gear. So, anonymous person who has not revealed yourself, thank you. I cannot tell you how excited and happy that made me. Because it's super, super lightweight and super, super warm, which it means a lot in a studio that actually has no heat in it. I have a feeling this thing's going to see considerable use as we move into the teeth of winter. Thank you very much, and thanks for making it Patagonia, because those folks are doing The real white hat, halo, and harp work where it concerns the public lands that are held, that we hold in trust for future generations. And they're going to fight Tangerine Tiberius as he attempts to see places like Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears National Monuments blown to smithereens. I guess maybe my mentioning my for Patagonia inspired someone. So thank you. Ah, darn. Okay. Oh, no Malloy tonight. He played our favorite Christmas song last night. The one night I forget to tune in. Damn it. But thanks for letting me know. So, Silent R. Lamar says, all I want for Christmas is to see Mitch on the top of a Christmas tree with the tip of the tree up his ass. You know, that's a hell of a thing to do to a Norway spruce or a Douglas fir or something like that. But still, I can't entirely disagree with you. Low-grade jingle for that. Thanks, Silent R. Lamar. But somebody took me seriously when I was talking about buying Patagonia and made me the beneficiary of it, and I cannot begin to thank them enough. That was magnificent. And you're paying attention, too, because apparently... or maybe you just picked the biggest size they had and had it sent. I don't know. But thank you. Thank you very, very kindly. And if you've got, this is an unpaid product placement. If you've got somebody that needs something like that, outdoor wear,
stuff for, you know, frigid conditions and whatever, or, you know, sun, really bright sunny conditions, Patagonia is a good place to go. Patagonia.com. It'd be really groovy if they would, like, sponsor the program. Well, that ain't going to happen. We don't even have anybody to, like, send out. We don't have a sales staff. We don't have any Herb Tarlics here. But be that as it may, thank you, whomever you may have been. So my weekend's going. I'm still going to keep my promise to myself, and Ferg and I are going to go on Sunday, Christmas Eve. Going to go and see It's a Wonderful Life on the big screen, because I have never seen it on the big screen. I only know what it looks like on television. I'm looking forward to it. There will probably be some sniffling on my part. He'll just have to get over it, being embarrassed by dear old dad and all of that, because it unleashes, what's that, the mystic bonds of memory? You know, we got a video here of regular 8mm film shot some 53 years ago of a little Christmas in Northwest Alabama. It was the third year that little family had been down there, and it's touching as hell. It's cute. It's an artifact of what seems a simpler time, and a little family filled with hope, with a whole bunch of life left before them. And with the exception of the last person to appear in that video, namely me crawling, there's only one person in that video left alive. But there is a ton of memory. And this time of year, with the waning of the light and the rebirth of the sun, I think my pagan Wiccan friends will be doing something special this evening, some sort of ceremony to mark the rebirth of the sun, S-U-N, not S-O-N. It's a trigger for those kinds of memories. And those kinds of memories, you know, whether we realize it or not, we make them every day. And so, you know, I said the other night that I'm not a big one for making resolutions. But I realized that I have made and kept one already, and I'm going to stick to it. Casablanca is one of my favorite films. How could it not be? And there's a scene in there where the Nazis march into Paris. And, of course, Ingrid Bergman is just stunningly beautiful. And at some point, Bogart says, "Ah, yes, I remember. The Germans wore gray. You wore blue." And she says, "Yes, perhaps I wear that dress again when they march out." Well, that's where I am with the idea of Merry Christmas. That disgusting misanthropic monster that Krampus with an orange hide and a some sort of animal on its head has absolutely destroyed the Christmas season. It's you know, for years and years and years we had to deal with various and sundry right wing turds is screaming about the war on Christmas, and then the carotene Caligula came along and just nuked it. for a lot of us. And so I have resolved that I will not let that phrase that begins with the letter M and the letter C pass my lips until he has passed into whatever comes after life on planet Earth. Or at least passed out of the White House. I mean, dear God. It was bad enough having to watch Mike Pencilneck Geek abase himself along with the rest of the cabinet in thanking and praising Marcus Aurelius for being so gosh darned wonderful and great. But it was just, and we've seen that before to a certain extent. But now, I'm not kidding. We have been we've had Christmas and the holiday season. Because it's a holiday season, and I don't want to leave anybody out of it, because it really isn't about anything Christian. It's about taking a moment to reflect on the possibility that we all have of being decent to one another. But I'm not kidding. I've got some audio for you here. One of those dark money groups that, they're a bunch of maggots. Make America gag again, Trumpansy scum. Well, there's a maggot Christmas ad out. Now, look, this is a little bit past hockey pucks. This is, before you take the hockey puck, you take a big guzzle of anti-emetic. If you had your wainscoted wassail on hand by now, you could take that, maybe, because, you know, some of the proprietary blend may or may not include paregoric. But be that as it may, whatever it is that you can do to keep you from hurling all over your holiday tree, take it, bite down hard on the hockey puck, and then do several trips around with the duct tape. Please. Here we go.
Thank you, President Trump.
Thank you, President Trump.
Thank you.
Everyday Americans are standing up to thank President Trump.
Thank you so much,
for
sir.
Making America great again.
Thank you for cutting my taxes.
Thank you for fixing our economy.
Thank you for keeping my family safe.
Thank you for putting America first.
Thank you for supporting Israel.
As veterans, thank you for reminding us to stand for our national anthem.
Thank you, President Trump.
Thank you, President Trump, for letting us say Merry Christmas again.
No, that's right. Thank you, President Trump, for letting us say Merry Christmas again. You know, it was really frustrating. I was over across the river today because we'd run out of decaf, and so I just popped into the store. And you know, lo and behold, there they were, a gang of nihilist. Nihilist ninjas just thumping the bejesus out of the Salvation Army bell ringer because the Salvation Army bell ringer had said Merry Christmas. Because here in Merca, the heathen, demon-crat liberals wouldn't let nobody say Merry Christmas. See, you know what? I'm not saying it. I will happy holidays, joyful Kwanzaa, what have you, till hell freezes over, but I will not say that until Donald Trump is either in the great beyond or beyond the presidency. The Germans wore gray. You wore blue. Yes, I'll wear that dress again when they leave. Well, I don't have a blue dress. And what an irony it was that it was a blue dress in Casablanca. You know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it echoes, doesn't it? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. No, it's not, Steve. Don't even write like that, but it's pretty disgusting. See, this is why I'm probably going to wind up doing yogurt or Tai Chi or Sun Tzu or something. You just got to and let it blow on past you. Mm-hmm. So it's disgusting, and that ad is nauseating. And look, that is where we freaking live now. That's the kind of stuff you get in autocratic regimes. That's the stuff of tin pot dictators and autocratic maniacs. And it's here. Yeah, I know. Ho, ho, ho to you, too. But there's nothing to be gained by pretending that our world today isn't what our world today is. Yeah, Darlene, that's a hell of a... Look, I do it to people every night, so it's only fair it gets done to me. Sorry if you haven't eaten dinner yet. Sorry if you already have. It's too hilarious not to share. Yeah. The resistance is real. That much is a reassurance. But from over at The Verge, Darlene sends along a link. It's from a year and a half ago, but still, it never fails to delight and or nauseate. 11 photos of New York City's naked Trump statue. Yeah. Look, we have to deal with where we are. Because the other side is pretending that everything's okay when everything isn't. I neglected to mention the embarrassing performance of Nimrata Haley at the United Nations, in which she threatened to tattle to Daddy Donnie about the countries that didn't, the countries that supported the UN resolution, non-binding, of course, condemning the United States' unilateral action in declaring that it would move its embassy to Jerusalem and thereby setting up lots more violence in what is laughingly referred to as the Holy Land. You know, it strikes me that place is supposedly sacred to Jews, Muslims, and Christians. And the entire history of the place is a history of conduct that is anything but sacred. If you could take all the blood that has been shed in that place and make it appear at one time in one place, it would probably submerge the city. A place is not imbued by sacredness in and of itself. It is made sacred by the conduct of the people in it. And unfortunately, because of what Donald Trump has done, Jerusalem will become less and less sacred. It's been occupied from time immemorial, and somebody's been willing to kill for it from virtually the first moment that some goat herd built a campfire on one of the surrounding hills. Yeah, it was, wasn't it, Clarity? Clarity says, geez, that was creepy of the ad. Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's only going to get worse. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. We have a full-on cult of personality. And, you know, Nimrata Haley at the UN kind of let everybody know that. I'm gonna go tell Daddy Donnie on you. And then uttered absolutely treacherous words about how the United States was being betrayed in its exercise of its popular sovereignty. Yeah, how's that working? I guess we're the only ones that get sovereignty. Meanwhile, Steve in far-frozen Ottawa says, this is why the Trump more Republican Party is better at politics. They have their nitwits always on message. On another note, isn't it really time to start calling him dear leader or great leader? I dubbed George W. Bush dim leader. Dumb leader? Dumb leader? Okay, maybe that. But there's nothing great or dear about him. Jiggling adipose wad of poison. Jim says, Trump worship. I've seen Stalin worship. Yeah, there's a brutal similarity. So again, we're going to have back-to-back with an intervening weekend. Front Porch Conversations, if you would like to join in, you know, a holiday version with a lot of people just jumping in and sharing all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it, Joe Keenihan used to say. But we can also share our joys and our happinesses. So if you've got some of that, by all means, please do share it. As we fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable in a little bit. There's been another revelation in the ongoing release of skeevy behavior by men toward women. And it's not good. The latest person being being Cenk Uygur, with a story appearing that I read earlier today, it's it's not as icky as it could be. But it's icky. The basically it involves. You remember a few weeks back when someone tried to sleaze all over Sam Seder because of a sarcastic tweet he had put up back in 2009 regarding Roman Polanski and some people trying to rehabilitate that child molester's reputation. MSNBC eventually backed off, realizing that they had been the victim of a right-wing smear perpetrated by Mike Cernovich. But, well, it was there that somebody decided to go, an outfit called The Wrap, and I don't know anything about them, decided to go digging around in Chink's distant past. In the early 2000s, I guess Chink was a horny, youngish guy. And he said things like, he posted rules like, "Women, ignore these at your peril. Rule one, there must be some serious making out by the third date. If I haven't felt your tits by then, things are not about to last much longer. In fact, if you don't get back on track by the fourth date, you're done. Rule two, there must be orgasm by the fifth date." Later on, writing about a trip to Mardi Gras, New Orleans, he said, "I had one of the best nights of my life at Mardi Gras. I kissed over 23 different women, saw and felt countless breasts, and was in a wonderful drunken stupor thanks to my friend John Daniels." Jack Daniels, you get it, right? Yeah. There was more. A tweet from June 28th, 2013. "The improbable breasts in Miami are only matched by the improbable butts. This place makes L.A. look real." The following day, "Just when I think Miami's all done, it pulls me back in. The women on this island are outrageously, almost unacceptably hot." So, contacted by this publication, Chink responded, and I think this is appropriate. "The stuff I wrote back then was really insensitive and ignorant. If you read that today, what I wrote 18 years ago, and you're offended by it, you're 100% right, and anyone who is subjected to that material, I apologize to, and I deeply regret having written that stuff when I was a different guy." Proving that people can change. But, you know, I have a feeling this is going to continue well past the well past the new year. So, that... Yeah. It's a smorgasbord this time of year. Lots of stories out there. This is something I would urge you to consider. You've heard me talk a lot in the past few months about the suppression of the National Academy of Science review of the mountaintop removal data pointing toward mountaintop removal as a massive insult to human health. And I used the word insult in the medical term, as a massive cause of illness in the areas where it's practiced. Well, Jeff Young, writing at WFPL.org today, said the prestigious National Academy of Sciences is pursuing private funding to complete a study of the health effects of mountaintop removal coal mining after the Trump administration ordered a halt to the scientific work. The panel of scientists assembled by the National Academies was months into a study, not years, it was a 2 year, it was more than months, into a study of the health effects of surface mining when the Trump administration's Interior Department told them to stop work. The Interior Department said it was reviewing its budget. This was, of course, a tissue paper thin bullshit explanation. National Academy spokesperson Ria Anandwala said there has been no further information on the budget review and the study has remained on hold since August. She added, given how important the study is to the citizens in the communities surrounding these surface mining sites in Appalachia, the National Academies believe the study should be completed and are exploring options to do so. And so they're trying to find private money, and I guess it would be about $400,000 because that was what was left of the $1 million grant when it was shut down, ostensibly for a budget review. Yeah, I know. But when I saw this article today, I was immediately reminded of the fact that not too awfully long back, with great fanfare, it was announced that Michael Bloomberg had given to the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign another $60 or so million. He'd given him $50 million before. And now this year he turned around and gave him 60 more. So that's over a tenth of $1 billion. A tenth of $1 billion that Bloomberg has given to the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. To the best of my knowledge, not a nickel of that has been spent in working to end mountaintop removal, at least not among any of the people who I know that actually work to end mountaintop removal. So it immediately occurred to me, and you can tell me if I'd read that and I was over there, I'd go, well, hell, $400,000 out of a tenth of $1 billion, where's the checkbook? Get me my checkbook and my big old money check signing pen and let's write a check to the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine and see to it that they can complete their necessary and badly needed review of the mountaintop removal science reports. Let's do that. Because after all, you know, we've done a lot of fundraising on the backs of the hillbillies. This is really kind of the very least we could do. You know, the article I have in front of me says, Anandwala said, private donors have expressed interest in paying to complete the study. She offered no further details. You know, maybe that's something Beyond Coal's already doing, although if I was a betting man, I'd bet it isn't. So maybe, just maybe, if a few people started, you know, tweeting at them and you know, whatever the Twitter handle is for Beyond Coal, tweet and tell them, you know, pay to finish the NAS MTR review. Maybe that'd be a good thing. Maybe it would do some good. It was just a few days ago. Let me see here. Well, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago. It was a month ago. But it was a month ago when I saw a paid ad on Facebook for SierraClub.org. Want clean energy that doesn't destroy our mountains, pollute our water, or make our families sick? EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt and his corporate polluter allies don't have our backs. Raise your voice to protect the Clean Power Plan. It was the part where it said, want clean energy that doesn't destroy our mountains? The Sierra Club has largely withdrawn entirely from the mountaintop removal struggle. I'm sorry to say it, but it's true. The Beyond Coal campaign has focused mainly on getting power plants to shift over from coal to natural gas. You may recall a few years back there was a humongous scandal in which Carl Pope, who was then the head of the Sierra Club, took enough money to burn an entire herd of sopping wet elephants with $100 bills. Sopping wet $100 bills at that. From the natural gas industry, the frackers, in exchange for the Sierra Club saying that natural gas is a bridge fuel to a clean energy future. Well, now we know, courtesy of the scientists at Princeton, who basically used the same methodology as Dr. Michael Hendricks did with regard to mountaintop removal communities, we know that living near fracking sites makes people sick and results in babies who are born in fracking areas being born with low birth weight, which will lead to them being sickly for the rest of their natural born days. But that's where a great deal of the Beyond Coal money has gone. Meanwhile, Bloomberg gave that money to Sierra Club when Geezer Disgustus was crowing about how The war on coal is over. Clean, beautiful coal, and the war on coal is over. And Bloomberg said at the time that he was doing it because he wanted to reignite the war on coal, and the press release said that some of these monies will go to actual organizations that are leading the way and fighting coal in their communities. No checks have yet arrived at Coal River Mountain Watch or any other grassroots organization actually standing up to the coal industry at the hazard of their own lives each and every day, of which I'm aware. But it would go a long way toward restoring my faith, such as it is, if they would just write a little tiny, tawdry, piddling, pissant $400,000 check out of the tenth of a billion dollars that they've been given by Michael Bloomberg to finish this National Academy of Science healthcare review. I hope that doesn't seem... I hope that doesn't seem just too outrageous. Oh, very good. Going back to names, the names for the fascist autocrat in the White House. Albert in Rhode Island says, "How about Dork Leader? Dork Leader. That, you know what? That's the best one yet, Albert. Thank you very, very kindly." I'm going to try to, I'll file that away and we'll see how it works in a sentence from time to time. That one may have sticking potential. Indeed. oh God. Okay. Well, apparently the letter from Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe has reached Billable Rick because we're down to only two Bobs. Bob. Any word on the sales of Trumpy Bears? Is it possible to buy shares in Trumpy Bear futures? Do they accept Bitcoin, Ethereum, cow pies? For all I know, Trumpy Bears may become maybe it's a crypto bear. One wonders if you really do get an American flag inside of it, or maybe a Russian flag instead. Billable Rick says, thanks, Bob, for having such a wonderful show. It's been such an honor and privilege being part of it. You have the best radio show in the entire history of the universe, are the smartest person, have the best words. Is it time to vomit yet? You damn sycophant! Now quit that, Billable Rick. Stop it. Sycophants all over the place. Meanwhile, whose subject line says, San Juan County readies for political shift following federal court ruling on voting districts, the Salt Lake Tribune. Mike in Cascadia notes, poor white Mormons. They can't stand the idea of equal voting rights for Navajos. San Juan County, County Commissioner and Cliven Bundy Buffy Phil Lyman said, The ruling is biased. The ruling is biased. It's intended to hurt blending, and it's aimed at me. Bears Ears, by the way, is in San Juan County. Yes. I'll bet they're just about on the verge of eating their own maggot hats. Because what the story says is, a federal judge has adopted new voting district boundaries in San Juan County, and those boundaries might very well reverse years and years and years and years and years of political dominance by a white minority over the Navajos who live there. Last night, U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby issued a ruling that gives Navajos a significant majority of voters in 2 of 3 commission districts and 3 of 5 school board districts. Judge Shelby ordered the new boundaries be used in special elections for all commission and school board seats in November. Jesse Trentadue, in a hearing on the case, who is a Salt Lake City-based attorney representing San Juan County, said the redrawn boundaries would amount to unconstitutional gerrymandering in the sprawling southeast Utah county and would discriminate against white voters. No, really? Oh, that's where we are now, is it? They're just out and out there and claiming reverse racism again. Some more. On the other hand, Judge Shelby wasn't having any of it. He said, it is critically important that the officials representing the citizens of San Juan County are elected under constitutional districts, not districts that have been racially gerrymandered. The county's objections do not explain how such elections would burden the county, nor does the county address the rights of its citizens to have officials elected from constitutional districts. Former County Commissioner Mark Maryboy, a member of the Navajo people, said, it's good news. It's unfortunate that it had to take a lawsuit to settle this issue. White people in Blanding and Monticello decided to prevent the redistricting from occurring. The white folks aren't going down without a fight, though. Our appeal is ready to file, so we'll file it, said Phil Lyman. It doesn't make sense. He complained. Doesn't make sense to divide Blanding into three districts. They say it's only two, but it's really three. That would be Phil Lyman, who in 2015 was convicted of misdemeanor crimes for leading a group on motorized vehicles, you know, four-wheelers, up Recapture Canyon, federal land where such use is not allowed. The appeal continues. Yeah, that's right. That's right. He's a persecuted person because it says right there in the Constitution that you can ride a four-wheeler anywhere you want to, as long as you're pursuing happiness and God and Kolob or something. Yeah. So here we are at the top of the hour. That's the filibobster for this 22nd day of December 2017. And so I haven't played a lot of Christmas music over the course of the holiday season. A lot of people don't like it. I do. I like the old stuff. I like the Johnny Mathis and the Nat King Cole. But of fairly recent vintage, I have a favorite secular Christmas carol. And it comes from an Australian fellow by the name of Tim Minchin. I've played it every year for the past few years. It gives me a case of the feels. And it really does explain some of the, the odd dichotomy between being a non-believer and yet enjoying the Christmas season. Of course, that's been, there's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly more than okay. So, again, if you have never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, I heartily encourage you to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and tell you which corner of the sky to look in for the Bob signal. And before you know it, you'll be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And it would be really great to have a rousing conversation this evening. So, fire it up. It is Friday on the Front Porch, the Christmas edition, the holiday season edition. And me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
I really like Christmas. It's sentimental, I know, but I just really like it. I'm hardly religious. I'd rather break bread with Dawkins than Desmond Tutu, to be honest. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to consumerism to the commercialization of an ancient religion, to the westernization of a dead Palestinian press ganged into selling PlayStations and beer. But I still really like it. Seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum, they'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I don't go in for ancient wisdom. I don't believe just 'cause ideas are tenacious, it means that they're worthy. Freaked out by churches. Some of the hymns that they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are dodgy. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to the miseducation of children who in tax-exempt institutions are taught to externalize blame and to feel ashamed and to judge things as plain right or wrong. But I quite like the songs. I'm not expecting big presents. I don't believe just 'cause ideas are tenacious, it means that they're worthy. I get freaked out by churches. Some of the hymns that they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are dodgy. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to the miseducation of children who in tax-exempt institutions are taught to externalize blame and to feel ashamed and to judge things as plain right or wrong. But I quite like the song. Expecting big presents. The old combination of socks, jocks, and chocolates is just fine by me. 'Cause I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. And you, my baby girl, my jet-lagged infant daughter, you'll be handed round the room like a puppy. Someday, that wherever you are and whatever you face, these These are the people who make you feel safe in this world. My sweet blue-eyed girl. Yourself 9,000 miles from home, you'll know whatever comes. Your brothers and sisters and me and your mom will be waiting for you in the sun. Sentimental, I know.
Yeah, does it to me every time. Chokes me right up. And by the way, if you would like to purchase the song, proceeds from it go to benefit autism research. Tim mentioned white wine in the sun. And I also love it because it's a Southern Hemisphere response. There's not a whole lot of people. Well, okay, maybe Southern California, the deep Southwest, South Florida, there are some folks who can drink white wine in the sun on Christmas Day. But not a lot of other places. You might get sun, but it won't be particularly warm. So I love that part too. But especially now that the family has grown, the idea of... It reaches out to far-flung family. Let's just put it like that. And yeah, there's some other great ones out there. Note from I Believe in Father Christmas from Greg Lake. James sent that along. It's good stuff. But anyway, it is Friday on the front porch, and let's run over and check in with Sparky and see what's happening. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not freezing, and if it was cold, I'd be warm.
I'm going to be firing up the jet engine here pretty soon.
Oh, the jet powered kerosene heater?
No, it's propane.
Ah, well.
I had to go out and get a new bottle for it today. That was an adventure. I went to Dollar General, and they didn't have any full ones. Iraq, the exchange was all empty. So then I go out to Home Depot, and they got a deal with kind of a user thing, but it wouldn't work. So I had to go in and get a gal to come out and unlock a deal and give me a bottle. And then I'm getting ready to leave, and I see this guy's jacked up pick-em-up truck, well, fairly jacked up, not real high. He's got a license plate on it with double X's on the side of it, and it says, State of Jefferson Border Patrol. So that was my afternoon adventure, besides going to the grocery store with all the slow shoppers.
Well, that sounds like an adventure.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm staring at Grady. He's up on the table.
Really?
Staring at. Yeah.
He's Grady the shop dog now has table privileges?
Oh, he's always had table privileges. He can't hurt that table. I mean, a solid steel table. It's a layout table for welding on.
Okay. I mean, as long as he doesn't transfer it to, like, the dining room table and think that the privilege extends to that as well.
No, he knows. He knows his place. He knows his shop dog.
Does he have a wreath on him today?
I got a Christmas tree, a fake Christmas tree in the vise.
Okay, that's cool.
I'll shoot a picture of it on the webcam. It's an old tree.
Thank God there's no maggots listening, or the idea of a Christmas tree in a vise. See, there really is a war on Christmas.
Yeah. No, it was my mother's last Christmas tree.
Aw.
My sister bought it for her. Anyway, and so.
So how many Christmases has that house where you live seen, Sparky?
In my family?
Yeah.
Since 1963.
54 of them. Very good. Nice. It's a lot of memories.
Old as you are.
Yeah.
Can you see the tree?
Not yet.
Oh, I gotta turn the camera on.
That helps. All right, I understand a little better. You said in a vise, and I was, well, but
that is a vise.
I know it's a vise. It's a vice doing double duty as a Christmas tree stand.
Yes. It's based on a tradition my stepson started a few years ago. He'd always put that tree in the vice.
Nice.
And there's Grady. And that's the table he's on. I think you can see it.
Yeah, I can. Oh, Grady's a good boy. He's a very good boy. Oh, what a noble profile.
Yeah, he's listening to something.
Does he just jump up on that table himself, Sparky?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, oh, what a
Labs
face.
Are cool.
What
Labs
a face. Yeah, not too far away from here, our buddy Kelly has been working with raising a chocolate lab puppy for a while now, and she's as adorable as one puppy can be, but she's got that whole Labrador Retriever puppy got to chew stuff thing going for her, and I'm told that she's gone through a few expensive sandals and more than a couple of TV remote controls.
Yeah, well, Grady's all Grady's got is his mining site out here in the backyard.
Well, she better watch out for her razor blades. I have a little dog that had a habit of chewing razor blades and somehow never got cut, even though she would, like, somehow blades out of the cartridge.
That just scares the hell out of me.
No kidding. Yeah, I've got to keep it in the shower now. Otherwise, she gets it if it's on the counter, because what will happen is a cat will play with things and knock things on the floor. And then she scoops them up and bites them, you know, chews them up. So,
well, I'm trying to talk myself out of believing that part of the reason Agnes is spending so much time over at our daughter's is that there's a new puppy over there.
Oh,
and she is the most adorable little Yorkshire Terrier you've ever seen. I mean, adorable. I mean, The meanest person on earth would look at her and go, oh, it's such a boo, 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 boo. Yeah, it's I have to check my blood sugar after I've been around the puppy because it's just so sweet, you know. Because
even Trump would like that dog, right, Bob?
Let's not push it, Rick.
Okay, okay.
No, let's.
Trump's the first president to not have a White House dog in a long time.
Well, I think Trump's the first president that a dog won't have in a long time.
There you go.
I mean, I don't think even a junkyard cur would have anything to do with Donald Trump.
I question anybody that doesn't like dogs. I really do.
Well, you know, Mark Twain extended that to dogs and cats.
Well, cats are cool too.
They're just different kinds of people.
Right, cats own you.
We have a game here. Margie saved a little feral kitten that was not going to be long for this world, and she came in and became baby sister to Mushu, the Siamese cat. And we have a game, and she's a little over a year old now. And we have a game that we play, where Bob opens the door to the bedroom, and little black cat runs through my legs and jumps up on the bed and rolls over and demands to wrestle. I mean, occasionally she'll accept a little scratching and head rubbing up around the neck and the ears, but mostly she sticks those paws up in the air and starts batting at you, and then, you know, kicks with no claws extended or anything, kicks with those little hind feet. And, you know, it just bites just ever so lightly, you know, just to remind herself that, you know, I'm like, okay, yeah, we got to do that. Okay, now you got to leave. But, how can you not? And Mushu just looks at her and as if to, you know, you're an idiot. Do you not realize how you're debasing yourself in front of these people? What are you, Mike Pence? Tough crowd.
I get it.
Yeah. So when do your crabs arrive, Steve?
Tomorrow, Bob. Tomorrow. I meant to ask you. May I get R-rated for just about 5 minutes?
It's gonna take. We're gonna have 5 minutes of R-rated radio.
Yeah, and what I'm about to say is not safe for work, and it's not safe for children.
All right, little Timmy, little Cindy,
how
out of the
for
room.
Food preparation? How about food preparation? Is that okay, Steve?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay.
I don't know. I'll have to let you be the judge of that. But Bob started to mention it, but I have just been totally disgusted by the verbal dick-sucking that the Republicans gave the president on Wednesday. You know, Chinless Mitch and Paul Ryan said his leadership was exquisite. Really? And Orrin Hatch said he was poised to go down in history to be the greatest president ever. And Bob also mentioned the cabinet meeting. I actually thought Mike Pence was going to bite his ear and give him a fucking reach around, man.
Well,
this is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. He's not a
king. And you know, the other side of that coin, Steve, is that anybody with a half a shred of integrity would never sit still for that, but the 71-year-old man baby with the hollowed out spirochete brain has to have that on a regular basis.
He loved it, and they know he loves it, and they got to feed this machine so they can perpetuate their evil agenda going into next year. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, and they're created, and I heard it said this morning, you know, in that filthy little habit that I indulge in every morning.
Yeah,
the question remains, what impact will he have on the presidency going forward? And they really didn't put a lot of flesh on those bones, but it's a legitimate question. Is it going to be okay for presidents to do whatever Trump does?
Yes, if there's no repercussions,
in the
it will
future.
Be.
Yeah,
it will be. If nothing happens because of his actions, it will be.
That becomes really creepy really fast, Rick.
Oh, I know.
You know, George Washington didn't want to be called His Highness or His Nobleness, and him and John Adams got in a big spat over that, you know. And we're moving away from
Well, George Washington damn sure did want to be called Your Excellency.
Well,
and he wanted, he maintained his presidency in a sort of regal distance.
Yeah, he trashed the White House too before he left it. But
he never even saw it.
Well, who was it that trashed it? Somebody trashed it. Well,
Clinton did. They took all the
W's off the keyboard.
Oh, the W's, yeah.
No.
But yeah, I know that there was a big brouhaha about that, and Bob is now re-educating me, saying that he did want to be called His Excellency. Of course, I guess I'd take too much education off the HBO John Adams series. I thought he didn't want any of that, you know.
Oh no, well, there was a lot of bowing going on, and one had an audience with the great Washington. And for instance, John Adams was his vice president, and he completely shut John Adams out of the government. That's what led John Adams to say that it was the most useless, worthless. The vice presidency was the most useless, worthless office in the history of human endeavors, or something like that.
But my point is the reverse. I don't think their founders meant for the president to be some kind of hero or some kind of king, or to have all this worshiping where they go along like they're doing with King Jong-un and just every one of them take a turn on sucking his dick, you know? I don't think that's what it was meant to be.
Well, you're getting some agreement. Brother Deacon Asa says, Steve's right. That Trump salad tossing that you played earlier, Bob, was simply gag-inducing. It'd gag a fucking buzzard clean off the end of a bone wagon. But it wasn't the first. You remember, what was it, 5-6 months ago that the cabinet gathered?
They did the same thing after he did nothing. He didn't even do anything.
It's all for the cameras.
So, just out of curiosity, anybody in the room, have you noticed your gas prices falling? Your gasoline prices per gallon?
Don't know. I have a Volt. I haven't had to fill up lately.
Nice.
I know Bitcoin tanked today, and so did most other currencies. I don't know if there's any relevancy to that or not.
Don't know.
I just noticed yesterday, after the passage of the Great Tax Scam Act of 2017, that my per gallon price at the pump dropped by a nickel. Who's the latest to jump in on this fraud parade? Yeah, there it is. Sinclair Broadcasting memo. To all Sinclair employees, we're grateful to our president and legislature for passing the landmark 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and are excited about the benefits it will provide for our country's economy, our company Sinclair Broadcast Group, and our employees. We're pleased to announce that we will be paying a special $1,000 bonus to almost 9,000 of our full-time and part-time regular employees at all our stations and subsidiaries, excluding senior-level executives and employees covered by collective bargaining agreements currently in the negotiation process. That means if you're a union member, you're fucked. We recognize that our employees are our most valuable resource, truly appreciate their combined achievements for our company, and look forward to a very bright future. Note, employees on extended leave will receive the bonus upon their return. Employees currently under a formal written disciplinary action may receive the bonus at a future date within 90 days at the discretion of the GM. Your mileage may vary.
And AT&T come out and going to give 200,000 employees a $1,000 bonus?
Comcast, it's a thing. And this is more Trump-filating because he tweeted about it.
Free enterprise. Free enterprise.
Free market.
Yes, get into that pyramid now before it gets high. And you can reap all the benefits being the first ones in on this landslide of prosperity coming our way.
I remember when I used to get $1,000 bonuses.
There'll be a buzzard in every pot.
Seriously, yeah.
And then you get your ass eaten alive in taxes for it.
They take taxes right out of the bonus check.
Yeah, talk about taxes here in California. We're fucked. I mean, in terms of the limitation on salt and the property taxes. I mean, you know, accountants right now are recommending that their clients prepay property taxes for, you know, that are otherwise due in April, that they pay them now before the end of the year. And I'm thinking of doing that, you know, because, you know, $10,000 of taxes isn't that much in a higher tax state like California.
In the big scheme of things.
You have to pay that much?
Huh?
You have to pay that much?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, we have to pay $530 a year.
Well, yeah, I guess I shouldn't bitch too much. I'm getting paid more than a lot of people are, so, you know.
Well, but remember, Sparky, you're up there where you don't get appropriate representation from Sacramento.
Same here. Yeah. Same here.
They just raised the DMV fees on your cars.
Yeah, they did. They're not cheap.
Mine went from $91 to $128.
Jeez. And you don't have a new car, I bet, do you, or do you?
No, an old car.
Yeah.
1999.
Usually the older your cars get, progressively the registration fees are supposed to go down. At least that's happened in the past. You know?
Not anymore.
Shit. Well.
Bob, who is this Marcus guy down here in the corner? I don't think we've heard from him, have we?
No. You sound familiar. Hey. Or the name's familiar.
Yep.
Yo, Marcus.
He's Kid Mark in the chat.
That's what I thought. Talk to us, brother.
Welcome aboard.
Probably can't find his mute button.
Howdy, gents.
Hey, there you are.
What's going on, brother?
And one lady.
Pardon?
I'm representing the fair sex today.
That's right. Yes, I think that was supposed to be a generic gents, but not to. Yes, absolutely.
That's okay.
So is it? You only talking about happy stuff, no sad stuff today?
We're
to the floor is yours, brother. Whatever you want, take it.
No. I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, do we?
No, if you're seeing clouds, tell us what you see in the universe, please.
So we can at least run for cover, go down into the cellar for protection, you know?
What's in your crystal ball?
Well, all that stuff about the, all the stuff about the Earth, the climate change and all that stuff, it's not going to work either way. Both sides aren't telling the full story. For example, if you talk about you have two cycles. It's called the short-term and long-term cycle. Got a sore throat, so I got to put something in my mouth. On the short-term cycle, you have that's what you see, such as the cows and stuff like that. And the cows, cattle accounts for about 18% of the
carbon dioxide,
greenhouse gases and stuff, versus 13% by all of transportation combined. But on the long-term cycle is where you have stuff such as coal and petroleum and everything. But the problem is that coal accounts for 1,000 gigatons of carbon per year. Petroleum is
that
four
was,
times...
That was gigatons, right?
Yes, gigatons. You know, it's 1,000 1,000 million, which is, 1 trillion tons of carbon, of CO2. And the petroleum is 4 times that amount. And then the last one is not 4 times petroleum. It's not 10 times petroleum. It's not 20 times petroleum. It's not 100. It's not 1,000. It's not 10,000. It's 12,500 times petroleum, or 10,000 times coal and petroleum combined. And that one is construction. And construction and agribusiness are both off the table. So you're never going to solve the problem. Unless you start to actively clean the environment. And the only way to do that is that you have to move into areas that you don't want to go into, which is you have to go into ethanol, you have to go into hydrogen, you have to go into all the others. Not so much electric, because electric's not going to help you much. And that's one of the biggest problems there.
And some form of sequestration eventually.
Yeah, if you use methods for hydrogen, such as hydrogen will clean up the air, because all you have to do is combust hydrogen along with your gasoline or whatever, and the air coming out is much cleaner than the air going in. If you use ethanol and you put out, say, cattails, you put cattails in the rivers and your waterways, and the cattails will clean up the waterways. And then, of course, you convert the cattails to ethanol. You can also go with kelp. If you put kelp out in the oceans, such as, or put it in the Gulf of Mexico, say, for instance, after putting it there, about 8,000 square miles, you will revert all the dead zones back into live zones again. But most people don't want to get into ethanol because they're always screaming about corn. So there you have it.
Well, they don't use their fertilizers properly, and it ends up in the waterways, and that's part of why we have dead zones at the mouth of the Columbia.
Right, and most of the corn that's used for ethanol production is what at least used to be referred to as number 2 field grade corn, which is also known as Roundup Ready corn.
Yeah, and that fertilizer that you're using, that's not because of the farmers. That's actually because of 1957. Prescott Bush and David Rockefeller got together and passed a law that made it mandatory for all commercial farmers to use petrochemical fertilizers. So the fault is not with the farmers, it's with Congress. Sorry.
Well, if there's a problem to be had in this country, you can usually find it, right smack dab in the middle of the Congress. Let me share a couple.
Yeah, you can fix the problem, but it's the way they're going is more about an agenda, more so of pushing, being political, more so than solving the problem. The other thing is that this is a fight to be the next energy supplier.
Well, I've got a couple of notes here, one that sort of dovetail with each other. One from Ray, I presume still down in Florida. We already gave them permission to do whatever they want. We pay them for it. Passive acceptance has no bottom. Then Earther, with something similar, says, subject line, Trump fawning. They worshipped Trump because they know that if you really massage his ego, he'll do what you want. The Chinese know that, and so do the Russians. And I'll add, Earther, so do the Saudis. You really can't top putting Trump's nauseating mug all over a skyscraper to welcome him to town. Earther continues, besides, he really is the best president as far as they're concerned, because he'll sign the bill they've been waiting for since FDR. To quote Flush Flimball, Roosevelt is dead.
His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
And that was some decades ago. Take care. Happy Chrismahanakwanza. That's a good word, Arthur. Wait a minute. Happy Chrismahanakwanza. Very good. Very good indeed. Then that, in turn, dovetails with something that Alma sent along. Don't know if you've read these, but this is a good one. The King and His Minions, and refers me to a column by the Rude Pundit, proudly lowering the level of political discourse, and he's everything he claims to be. The great grovel of 2017, Republicans declare Trump their king. If I were the greatest fuck genie with the biggest dick and a tongue so dexterous that anteaters get jealous, I'd be fucking embarrassed if my lovers kept telling me how awesome I am, how they've never squirted or vibrated with such intensity, how exquisite my abilities are. Hell, in reality, I'm not half bad in the sack as far as middle-aged men go. But even so, I don't want every guy and gal who ever had a great rude ride to walk up to a microphone and announce that their sexual satisfaction is only due to my mad skills. I mean, Jesus, how pathetic must you be to need that kind of ego stroke? Send me an edible arrangement or something. Then again, I'm not Donald Trump, who still remains our goddamn president. Apparently, Trump is the kind of lay who needs to be told constantly that his tiny prick is huge, that his fumbling fingers are hitting the G-spot, and that your moans aren't cries of pain, but of ecstasy. In the span of a little over 4 hours, two groups of grown men and women prostrated themselves before Trump and told him how he gave them screaming orgasms. And then goes into a further description and closes, as for Vice President Mike Pence, you'll like this, Steve, as for Vice President Mike Pence, who must drink Trump's semen as a protein supplement, no words from the effusive, humiliating phrase he said could make the point more than this image from the angle Fox News had while Pence was speaking at a morning cabinet. And it's a photograph of the back of Pencil Neck Geek's head looking at Trump sitting there with his arms crossed, staring him down. What a fucking degrading display for the entire nation. Goddamn, Trump must have some serious shit on these people. Or they're just groveling tools, or both. Either way, this was a coronation moment. They've declared Trump their king, immaculate and omnipotent, and they his loyal subjects. There are no checks now, and the world is out of balance. Seems like a lot of people are onto the same basic thesis, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean it's just so obvious. That's the problem, you know. I mean, these people have basically sold their souls to this guy. He is their god, essentially. He's like the, you know, like Amon-Re, you know, the sun god that you know, or the like a pharaoh almost in terms of, you know, the way these guys are the guys and women are prostrating themselves at you know, at Trump's throne. And it's a damn good thing that the camera wasn't didn't have an angle shooting up from underneath that table, because you'd have seen a whole bunch of erections there, you know? I mean, it was just totally ridiculous, you know?
Ew.
Yeah.
But I exactly. Understand, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we no longer have a democracy. I mean, just think about it. How many people want background checks on guns? What percentage of the people? And do we have it? No.
No. And, well,
how many
but
want
but
to
again,
ban on automatic weapons? Do
but,
we have
but again,
it? No.
But again, Rick, I caution. I always throw out a caveat when anybody starts throwing around the word democracy, because
okay.
We don't have one, and okay. We have never had one.
Okay, Republican form of government. Let's just say that.
Yeah, let's say republic.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go back again, and you know, all praise to Dr. Bill. If you go back and read the Federalist Papers, you'll find that Madison says, "Whatever we come up with, we're going to call it a democracy,
mm-hmm.
because we can."
Mm-hmm.
But we're not having no democracy,
right.
because from a historical perspective, the entire reason for the for the ouster of the Articles of Confederation is that the states were all able to do their own things, and democracy, actual, real, no kidding democracy, was breaking out all over the place, and that could not be tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
And so in many ways, the Constitutional Convention was an effort to thwart democracy, and that's why we wind up with the form of government that we have.
Right.
But that's not to say that there aren't some intimations toward democracy. It's just that we're not, as I've said before, democracy in the United States remains aspirational as opposed to operational.
Right. It's true. That's true. I mean, just think of all the struggles that, we've had, like giving women the right to vote, people other than, the white aristocracy right to vote.
Well, when did we finally get around to the direct election of senators?
Yeah, not until, was that after, that was after women had the right to vote, isn't it? Yeah.
I do believe.
Yeah, maybe in the 30s, I'm not really sure. 20s, maybe? Yeah.
Meanwhile, having a little bit of fun with the art of word knowing, Dan says, we don't have a democracy, we have a dildocracy. That's when we get fucked over by our politicians.
That's worthy of a slight cowbell, I think, Bob.
I agree. Yes, absolutely. I'm not sure how the cowbell's coming through on the televangelist mic now, but is it coming through?
You're rattling good, Bob.
Okay, thank you, Clarity. Thank you. but democracy is something to be sought, not something to be acknowledged as an a life in being, as it were. So, but that's not to take anything away from because what is happening to this country, and anytime I say, anytime I look backward on this country from where we now stand, I realize that I run the risk of pretending, and I will not so pretend, that we had something that was democracy or democratic. But we did have something that worked. Whatever it was, it worked. It didn't work for everybody, and it worked better for a narrow section of this country than for most people. But, most people are not as psychopathic as the 1%. The hell was that?
My guitar.
Oh, okay. No worries. Yeah, most people, who was the Englishman who said, most people lead lives of quiet desperation?
Is that John Locke, maybe?
I don't know. But
Lord Byron?
I don't know. Maybe it was Benny Hill. but
Eric Idle.
Emerson
was kind of morose.
But the thing is, most people don't want what the 1% has. That's what makes such a farce the idea that wanting the tax code to be fair is a matter of class warfare. Most people don't want to be Donald Trump. They might entertain a fantasy of it, but it would eat them alive, just as it has eaten him alive, just as it has reduced him from maybe once upon a time being something resembling human to the adipose wad of jiggling spirochete-infested tissue that he now is. It destroys most people, and the person who is extremely wealthy and at the same time does great things with that wealth is a very small subsection of the people who have great wealth. Chuck and Dave Koch like to plaster their names all over PBS. But then at the same time, they do everything, and, the public broadcasting system, but at the same time, they do everything they can to harm the public. Remember, public is also a key component of the word republic. Republic is an anglicization of a two-word Latin phrase, res publica, which just means the public thing. The the it, it refers to the idea of governance as being a public act. And most people, you know, most, really, I mean, if we're being completely serious about it within this conversation, is there anybody within the sound of my voice that wants to be as rich as the Koch brothers? Now, I mean that very, very seriously. Once you get past the, oh, golly gee, I would put solar panels on every roof in the United States and all of that. Do you really want that? Or do you just want to quietly enjoy your life? Go, Sparky.
That's what I want to do, quietly enjoy the rest of my life.
I mean, it's like people who, you know, looked at Elvis or Michael Jackson. Those poor bastards couldn't appear in public without being being tormented. You know, celebrity, even minor celebrity, means that you'll get annoyed just trying to sit down and eat your dinner in a restaurant. Oh, and by the way, it was Thoreau.
Oh.
Yeah, most men lead lives of quiet desperation. Yep. Thank you. Thank you to Lee in New York, and thanks to James as well. Both of those caught that early on.
A good New Englander.
Yeah, Thoreau, who was going to go back to nature to contemplate his navel and consider the nature of man in a little hut that he built out by Walden Pond. And he did. And then his mama brought him lunch every day.
Sure. You got to have some brain food.
Man, that's roughing it. I mean, Henry, I brought you your New England boiled dinner for luncheon today. How's it coming there, Henry, with your contemplation of the human condition, Henry? I got to actually stand where his little cabin was once upon a time. And it was neat. And it's Walden, you know, Walden is not, I mean, it's not a pond like I think of a pond. I know lots of people around here who own farms and they've got a pond. And you can throw a rock across it. Walden Pond is a small lake. More like something you might expect to see up in Minnesota or Wisconsin. But you know, I don't want to take too much away from Thoreau. He died young. It was pathetic. And he wanted he was a different drummer. He did not fit inside of his own culture, and that was a culture that was welcoming of him. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. Thank you, Ron and Molly. But we don't want that. We would just like to live in a country. And here's the difference as I understand it. We'd like to live in a country where we are not merely prey for the predators of the 1%. In a way, I get annoyed, in White Wine and the Sun. Tim Minchin has that line about the commercialization of a dead Palestinian press ganged into selling PlayStations and beer. And that's just so true. And for some reason or another, some holiday ads have gotten under my skin more than others. You know, I'm surprised they didn't, Steve, I'm surprised they didn't make an ad with Gordo wearing like a Christmas wreath collar or something, but they chose not to. There's a Jaguar. It's the car ads, okay? It's the car ads. And one that sticks out in my mind this year is a Jaguar ad that has run time after time after time after time because I basically watch a very small handful of channels. And in it shows the happy white upper middle class guy who lives in a house that's probably $2 million if it's a dime, and he's got a couple of little kids and a lovely wife, and he hands her the keys to this Jaguar SUV and says, "Happy Merry Christmas, baby, or honey, or love of my life, or whatever." And she gets in it, and she's beaming, and she says, she looks down at the odometer. It's got like 981 miles on it. She says, "Why has it got so many miles on it?" And then suddenly he flashes back to buying the car and getting the key and getting in the car and driving out into the, what looks like somewhere in the Northwest. You know, a lot of coniferous, you know, big pine trees, two-lane road, and you hear the roar of the Jaguar engine, and it's foggy and kind of gray, and he's obviously just driving the hell out of the car, and it cuts back to him, and he goes, "What?" And how many people see those ads and fucking ache? Because they know they're never going to have one. They know that, you know, the most that they can hope for is to have maybe a new set of tires to get them through the winter. And you know what? That's cruel. It's cruel. It's no more or less cruel than schoolyard, you know, playground bullying. It's economic bullying is what it is.
It's Madison Avenue, Bob. It's selling you things you don't need, really.
But it's also making you want things that it's not even a matter of need. It's making you that's stoking class envy. Because they don't make ads like that for, the Toyota Yaris, or that little tiny Nissan, not the Sentra, the one below that.
Well, that's because they're target marketing it. They don't have to sell that many to run a Jaguar commercial. You know, if they're going for a broader market, you know, they're not going to use the same approach. It's not envy. It's utility. It's acuteness. You know, whatever asset of that product they want to accentuate. Now, me, the big fancy sports cars and things, I've never had a lust for that. In fact, I have kind of I just don't like, you know, cars just don't interest me. But to other people, they do. You know, I don't watch sports and I don't watch golf, those sort of things. And that's where a lot of that stuff is promoted, correct? On TV?
Well, the Jaguar, they run the hell out of the Jaguar ad on MSNBC.
Okay. Well, then they're catering to the, what do you call it, the East Coast, the coastal elites. And they're upper echelon of, you know, middle class. And they, you know, it is. It's geared to those people. What we think of as middle class is, you know, working poor. For a lot of people, they have a misconception of what middle class is.
Well, what the middle class is largely disappeared. That's another part of my inquiry. How many of these people are left in this country that have houses like in that, that are like the one in that ad, and buy cars like the one in that ad?
Maybe 20%.
The young people too. Most young people nowadays can't afford that shit either.
No, it's kind of a fairy tale world. If you can come up with this, you know, you can invent a new app, or you can do this thing, you know, and it can go viral. You know, that's the concept of, you know, having an idea, something novel, which is kind of how the Renaissance came along, was people were trying to get new concepts of construction and architecture and art, and all those things came along, you know, out of a dark period. I don't know if this recession, depression thing and, you know, modernization at an accelerating rate, you know, is just stressing people out. We found out that ODs are up 21% last year on, you know, drug overdoses in 1 year, 21%.
And who's ODing? It's basically the, you know, the white middle-aged men, right, for the most part?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of the same demographic that happened, even though Rush is kind of one shade, when their economy collapsed.
Right.
There was a lot of people drinking themselves to death.
Drinking and smoking and...
Vodka was the cheapest thing you could get, you know? Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So, yeah, you get malnourished, and then that's all you're consuming.
Right, right.
But anyway, yeah, Bob, I understand exactly what you're talking about. But what I'd also say is, you know, you watch that stuff, and it imprints, you know, in your brain. And, of course, it sticks with you because it's designed to do that. Whether it's, you know, creature comforts or whether it's status or just, you know, you get a thrill driving fast, whatever, you know, whatever your thrill or security you're seeking. And I think, you know, we go against the energy, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, this time of year, you're supposed to be quiet and still and get rested up and procreate.
Well, so you're sitting out here in rural, you know, Appalachia, this is the time of year when you do all your harness mending.
Yeah. Yeah,
you do all the stuff that can be done indoors, and you do the stuff that you're going to be too busy raising enough food to get you through another year. And I'm talking about our agricultural past.
Yeah,
and it's a contemplative time.
Yeah, but with the electric light, you know, it's 24/7. If you know, it's there for you.
And you know, I do confess, I love great automobiles because I like driving. You know, I know people who treat eating as merely a matter of fueling the machine. So it matters not what goes in as long as they keep going. And I know people who don't much care about cars, but I do. I like them. And so maybe that's why this. But it's beyond that. It's the, it is. It's class warfare.
Yeah.
It is envy generation. I just got a note from Lee in New York, who says the big lie for me in car ads is the tachometer going from 1,000 to 6,000 RPMs in 2 seconds. That only happens in neutral. My car engine going fast in neutral literally gets me nowhere. No, but,
well, I guess
but there are cars now that'll do 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah, the electric one, whatever they call it, the Phaeton.
Oh, no, I mean the Nissan GT-R and several other sports cars now.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of, and you know, I just got one of those lovely notes from Brother Deacon Asa. By the way, if I was a millionth as wealthy as the Koch brothers are, the horn would be afloat with no funding issues for the rest of eternity. And that's the way we think. That's the way we think. You know, I sit there and I do my lottery fantasy and I think how cool it would be to put solar panels on every rooftop in this little burg where I live. And just let them see that renewable energy works and let them watch their coal-fired power bills go through the floor. And there are people who have the wherewithal to do that. They ain't doing it. Meanwhile, I get a little pushback from Laurel saying, Bob, you're wrong on your insistence that people don't want to be filthy rich, especially among Trump supporters. Most of the millions of Trumpansies don't worship the Donald because they love his policies. They worship him because they actually want to be him. And I get that. But the fact of the matter is, if you gave that to them, I mean, it's like riding a tiger. So once you're on the back, all you can do is grab the ears and the tail and hang on. Because most people are not equipped for it. what's the word I'm looking for? It's at the point of being proverbial. You can go online and just look up disastrous lottery winners. People will win horse-gagging amounts of money, and they're broke in a year. We watched it happen here to an asshole who won what was at the time the biggest Powerball jackpot in history. And he showed up on the Today Show in his black cowboy hat with his tifuses out and talked about how he's going to give millions of dollars to God. And the next thing you know, he's getting rolled in a strip joint parking lot because he's carrying a briefcase full of cold hard cash. And then he winds up broke, and the kneecap gang from Vegas are coming after him because he's turned out to be a deadbeat on his debts, and he buys a bunch of shit for his family, and his granddaughter ODs and gets her body hidden in the woodpile by her dirtbag drug addict boyfriend.
Bob, are you sure that wasn't the Palin family?
It sounds very Palin, but no, this... I mean, but this guy, the thing is, this guy was an asshole before he was a millionaire before he won and had made his and owed a small fortune to in taxes and workers' comp to the state of West Virginia. And people are not prepared for that kind of wealth. And yet we sit and we dream about it. But at the end of the day, what we want, and Laurel, I would say that at the end of the day, what they want too, yeah, that's his name, Jack Whitaker. Thank you, Devin. That was him. People want to not want. I go up to the Wiggling Pig, and, you know, the meat case is in the back, and they've still got a meat cutter there who does a lovely job, you know, cutting steaks out of whole hunks of beef and pork and whatnot. And mostly I see people walking by the meat case and they'll pick up something and look at it and put it back. And they'll have a kind of a wistful look on their face. Now, maybe it's not like that in more prosperous parts of the country, but it's like that here. And you know, they'll opt for the 70% or 30% fat ground beef, hamburger meat. But they take a nice long look at that ribeye steak. God damn, I saw a whole, I was in Kroger the other day. And I saw, because back when we had a whole bunch of people to feed here, I would do a whole standing rib. Because, you know, there were 12, 13 people to feed. But I looked at a whole ribeye in Kroger. Damn thing was $161.
How many pounds of meat is that, Bob?
Maybe 13, 14?
Should. In the old days, you could get like a whole side of beef for that much money, probably, you know? Almost. Maybe not quite.
And I got to thinking, if I was doing the Christmas dinner that I used to do in years past, that Christmas dinner would come in somewhere around $500 now. And there aren't a lot of people who can do that, at least not where I live. Maybe I'm artificially transposing the miseries of Appalachia onto the rest of the country, but I got a feeling I'm not. And let's remember, Appalachia extends from Mississippi to Maine. And as I've said before, the real lesson from this this tax scam, this giant ripoff, is that they want to make the rest of the country Appalachia too. And they took dead aim at you, Rick.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, we're basically...
And they took dead aim at Tracy. And yeah. Everybody in California and Oregon and Washington and New York and Massachusetts and Pennsylvania, they took dead aim at you.
Well, you know what, Bob? We're all District 12 now, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much. That's the plan of the Koch boys and, you know, the Trump, dump or whatever, you know. And the Republicans, yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan to basically get rid of the middle class. We're too troublesome. We have, we have too much time on our hands to make trouble. We have to be kept busy working so that we have no other time, you know, to, let's say, agitate and, you know, question what we're being told or how we're living our lives or what have you, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't necessarily know what the thesis of what I'm talking about is, but I think it was tied in with the idea of Christmas. And, I mean, how many people do that? Buy somebody a car for Christmas? I mean, is that really a thing that happens?
Well, do we have any listeners from Beverly Hills? Maybe that happens in Beverly Hills, Bob.
Not I, said the serf.
No. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, not I, said the peasant.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people have to have a need for a new car.
That's true. Yeah, most of the time it's not like because you want to get one, it's because you need one, you know?
Now, there was, but that's the thing. There was a once upon a time America.
Go on, go.
And in that once upon a time America, working stiffs went and bought themselves a new car every 5 years, whether they needed one or not.
Yeah, that's about right. That's what my mom and dad did when I was growing up.
Part of the reason for that was the planned obsolescence of the cars, too, because they were really made shitty for a long time. At least American cars were.
Yeah, but the working stiffs had the buying power, too.
Right, they did. They did. Yeah.
And that went bye-bye with Reagan.
Oh, yeah. I would say we can trace most of the economic problems, almost, I'd say probably 99% of the economic problems of the middle class back to the Reagan policies and how the country's economic policy started to shift as a result of his,
yeah,
you know,
well, there's a statistic out there that I've remembered for a very long time. I presume it to be true, that says, you know, because the right wing's always talking about how, you know, we need our family values. Well, the last time in the United States when a middle-class family, an average middle-class family, could exist on a single paycheck was the Carter administration.
Well, we can't forget. I'm gonna step in here and.
Hi, John.
Hi, guys. I'm gonna be a little hard on Clinton. I do not like Clinton. I do not like. Think that he was a horrible president for one of the. I mean, he was up there with Bush, guys. He repealed Glass-Steagall. He signed NAFTA in the law. He did his stupid ass welfare reform shit. I mean, this guy also. We got to blame a lot of the stuff on him. I call him Ghost Town Clinton because he signed that NAFTA, and that NAFTA outright created ghost towns.
Okay, hold on, John. Now, this is not the Clinton Defense Network. I want you to understand that right off the bat. But,
I know. I'll take him over Trump any day, by the way.
But
Bob, stop telling us how to criticize Clinton, okay?
Yeah. Stop telling us how to Clinton hate, Bob. But the fact of the matter is, NAFTA was already a masturbatory fantasy of both left and not left, but both the Democrats, some Democrats and all Republicans toward the end of the first Bush regime. And with that being the case, it was going to happen. NAFTA was going to happen regardless of who became president in 1992. Now, I've come to the conclusion, John, and this is the part where I'm agreeing with you, I've come to the conclusion that America would not have been appreciably different if George H.W. Bush had won a second term. Because when you look at, when you look at the, in fact, the primary difference that might have occurred had George H.W. Bush won the second term is that the Gingrich Revolution might not have happened. Think about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so you've got Ross Perot to thank for that. But it was NAFTA was going to happen one way or the other. So, you know, okay, sure, blame Clinton for signing it, but George H.W. Bush would have signed it too because his nasty big brother Prescott was, among other things, the president was, among other things, the president of the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce.
His dad, you mean?
No, his brother.
So there was a Prescott Jr. Okay.
Yes.
Not the one that was charged with trading with the enemy.
No. Prescott Jr.
Okay. You remember Prescott Sr., right? The guy that
doing
business with the Nazis.
Brown Brothers Harriman. I absolutely do.
Yeah. Yep. Well, by the way, real quick, I don't know if it's still out there or not, but there's a documentary. It's kind of compelling. It's called Bush Killed JFK. And this is a guy that thought that Bush Sr. and Prescott Bush were involved in the assassination of JFK. Now, that might sound a little tinfoily to you, but, dude, this guy comes up with some pretty good points in this film. He's a history teacher from L.A., and he seemed a little bit, like, sort of pro-Obama, you know what I mean? Not that that's a bad thing or anything, but, you know what I'm saying? I just kind of – I look out for people like that, sort of, you know what I mean? I don't like hacks.
Yeah, hey, who's banging? But, who's banging? Okay, yeah.
But I got to tell you, man, that shit about the cabinet meeting where everybody just genuflected for this fucking animal – that was sickening. That was absolutely sickening, man. I know I'm always whining about stuff like this, but you know, it scares me, guys. I'm fucking scared. You know, there's nothing else I can really say about this. Like, this is, I mean, what we're seeing right now is the rise of an autocratic dictatorship. And you guys, everybody likes to call these guys fascists. Well, they might actually be fascists, but I think the better term for them is just tyrants. In general, they're tyrants. That's what they are. And
well, I use the term, John, I use the term fascist because it seems most applicable. Because fascism, in its purest sense, is the marriage of the power of government to the marriage of the power of the corporation, creating an autocratic corporate state. And you talk about books. You know, this is stuff that people have been warning about for goddamn eons. I was a little pimply-faced college freshman in 1981, okay, 1982, second semester, when my anthropology professor said, y'all need to go, he said, it's not required reading, but you need to go and read a book called The Sovereign State of ITT. Okay?
Okay.
So this is like from the 1970s, people writing about the unaccountable, borderless threat posed by unaccountable borderless corporations. So, and by the way, I've got a piece of a note here that I need to share as well from Ray. Subject line: fuck you long time. Seems like Nixon gets a pass. Before him, everything at the department store wasn't made in China. That was a huge game changer. Well, Nixon opened the door to China, and he largely did that as a desperate attempt to get the heat off of him from the growing Watergate crime. But the fact of the matter is, that just established diplomatic relations. It's because those diplomatic relations were opened up that somebody like Prescott Bush can then go in and create, for all intents and purposes, out of whole cloth, the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce, which then begins to argue for not just normalized diplomatic status, but active trading partner status. And so by the time the George H.W. Bush administration comes along, that's when you begin to see some Chinese imports entering the market. Then when Bill Clinton comes in, it's a technical term, most favored nation trading partner status. And that was accorded to China on a reviewable basis, but Clinton comes along, if I recall the timeline correctly, and he signs China's permanent most favored nation trading status. And that is when the doors blew off. And when I said some Democrats, and talking about NAFTA a little bit ago, all Democrats didn't buy into this. You know, the AFL-CIO and all the labor unions that had anything to do, for instance, with sewing or textile manufacture, looked at Bill Clinton and said, if you sign this, we are going to hemorrhage jobs in this country.
Even Ross Perot said that, but he did.
And Bill Clinton said, yeah, but it's a global economy. And so,
your impression of him is so funny.
So he bought into, and this is a correct use of the word. Okay, when remember when I would turn the reverb on and say, neoliberal, because among the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade, neoliberal means I got a cold cup of coffee at Starbucks this morning. But neoliberal means anything I don't like, or neoliberal means Jill Stein says the Wi-Fi is eating my brain. Neoliberal means it has had all the meaning sucked out of it. But those were really neoliberal policies. The same thing that was enunciated by nasty old Margaret Thatcher when she came up with the acronym TINA, there is no alternative. This is also the same woman who said there is no such thing as community.
Well,
that's the beginning of the end, and I don't want to monopolize the front porch, but you know I've sat in seminars where people who were actively engaged in trade and manufacturing in China explained the rules of the road over there. For instance, let's say you're Firestone and you want to make tires in China. Well, the Chinese government set it up so that they'd be more than happy for you to set up a Firestone plant to make tires in China. But in exchange for that, you had to give them access to every last bit of your proprietary technology, and they in turn would agree not to put it into production for like 5 years. But baby, at the end of year five, they were going to be competing with you head to head.
I didn't know that. Well, that's interesting. Going back to fascism, because I got to get off in a couple minutes here. I'm about to start a gig. Henry Wallace, he was FDR's vice president, probably the one of his vice presidents, probably one of the most progressive vice presidents or presidents we've ever had. I mean, this guy was pure as the driven snow. I'm serious. I mean, he was – the purity people would have loved him. But – and he was pretty much the brains behind the New Deal. He was one of the major architects of the New Deal. This guy saved this country.
And he was despised.
He was the spy. Oh, my God. What they did to him in the – I think it's the 1944 Democratic Convention was pretty similar to what they did, generally speaking, to Bernie Sanders. But, you know, he – of course, since he was vice president during the World War II, and he got to be briefed on fascism, basically, generally speaking, every day, probably. He got to sit in these briefings about what was going on with the war, with the Nazis, with the fascists. I mean, you know, fascism was a household name back then. Everybody spoke it. Now you nary hear any people. When I use the terms fascist, even people that I know that are supposed to be our political allies, they kind of look at me with their fucking head sideways. Like I just spoke a unfucking, you know, like I just spoke Voldemort's name or something. You know what I'm saying? But back then it was a household name. Everybody
But the reason is that the word fascist has been successfully elided with people who goose step and wear snappy black uniforms designed by Hugo Boss. Okay.
Specifically to Nazis. And yeah, limited to people
And that's why that warning comes along that when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross.
Boy, is that goddamn true. Yeah. That was more. I have never seen anything more true.
It's absolutely,
seriously. But,
well, it was predictable. But that's where we are now. And that's something that I have preached for years now, John. That we don't recognize fascism because it doesn't look like there's no grainy black and white people marching down the street
with full swastikas, exactly.
They're in full fucking color. They live next door to us.
Exactly, they're everyday people.
And
doesn't
some,
that give you the
feel? And some, I assume, are good people.
Right. Right, yeah, there you go. That doesn't give you the chills, but well, Henry Wallace, he was asked about fascism when he was vice president. Actually, he wrote a New York Times interview, and I remember reading this, and you might want to dig this up and take a look at it. And somebody asked him about that. They said, fascism could never come to America, though. That's what the interviewer said, kind of like a rhetorical, you know, sort of like a rhetorical question. And he goes, oh, it can and it will. He says, but fascism when it comes to America is going to be basically a bunch of like, what do you say? Oh, yeah. He said that they will rule by deception. That's pretty much a direct. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but I'm pretty sure that's what he said. He said they will rule by deception. Deceit is going to be their tool, not violence. Deceit. And it's going to be much, much more effective and much more long term than
right because they're capable of learning. Look, whether it's Ludlow, Colorado, or Matewan, West Virginia, or the Pullman strike, or the Haymarket affair, or Flint, Michigan, when Capitol marched in with guns ablazing, they realized how much they inflamed the passions of working Americans. And that made unions palatable. So they switched tactics. Instead, now what they do is they put a velvet glove over the iron fist. The people who used to work for Massey before it bottomed out and became part of Alpha Natural Resources. Those people thought they were kings of the universe, and all they were was working people. But at one point in time, they had shit tons of shares of stock that were valued north of $70 a share. They were Bitcoin millionaires before they were Bitcoin millionaires. And then, of course, the stock tanked, dropped to 3 cents a share, and they were back to being working stiffs. And it was But conveniently, the coal association and the companies had planned for such an eventuality because the whole plan was always to rip off their workers, and they explained that it was because there was a Negro in the White House. And the racist coal miners bit because it served as confirmation to their pre-existing biases. Well, John, enjoy the gig and happy holidays to you. Play something. I don't know. Play something special tonight.
Well, we'll try. Appreciate that, Bob, and everybody. Have a good holiday. I think I'll probably end up talking to you guys Monday night, 6 o'clock.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's just going to be Christmas on the front porch. We'll start it. We'll start it right at jump. I won't filibuster
okay.
for an hour.
Real quick, is Ferg a comedian?
He's going to try his hand at it tonight.
Nice. I saw, because I follow you on Instagram, and you know, and I see his posts and stuff, and yeah. So that's pretty cool.
He's never done it before, but we're gonna take a run at it tonight, and as soon as the program's over, we're gonna head over to the venue and see how it shakes out. And I told him if he gets cold feet, that I'll jump up there and do Uncle Bob's Bible stories. That's usually good for a laugh.
Oh yeah, you will get a laugh out. Did you see that his one recent Instagram post? I didn't understand it at all, man. He's taking a video of some cartoon of a woman and saying, you know what I used to like to do after school? And that he's, I don't know, maybe you just want to watch it. I don't know if I should say it.
I'll wait. I am not fully approving of some of those posts, but you know. There you go.
No, you don't. I don't think you approve of this one, man.
But I did like the one he posted the other day from someone else, who was talking about, you know, mom, dad, moms and dads. When it comes around, tell the kids at Christmas that you were the ones who brought in the DS3 or the PlayStation or you know, these big ticket Christmas items, and tell them that the socks and the underwear and the clothes are from Santa. Because there's a shitload of children out there who want these big ticket items and will never get them. They weren't good enough for Santa to think well of them. Right.
There you go. That's smart.
Yeah. Well, anyway, have a great gig. And I don't know, play God Rest Ye Merry War Pigs or something.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Sounds good.
John, you take care. And hey, Steve, you still there, brother? Oh, Steve, if you've gone to sleep on us, haven't you?
No, I think he went out of the room.
I think he's playing with Cletus.
Well, that's possible. I felt like we needed to give him some shit for drinking Budweiser with those crabs, but that's okay. That's okay. Here in a little bit, I'll leave the group a little bit early, and we'll do the reading thing. Ferg is in there warming up with his Luke chapter whatever. That's a tradition. There's no way to, you know, it can't involve the other kids.
Oh, it's some kind of Bible thing?
Well, it's, you know, the Christmas story that we've only read, you know, every year for the last 13 years. But,
oh,
yeah.
But does that, you said it was Luke or something?
Yeah, Book of Luke. Gospel of Luke. Oh. That's where it comes from. I got some emails rolling in. Just a note coming from Renee, who says, wishing the Horn staff, labs, and listeners all over the world warmth and peace and health and joyous winter holidays. Thank you, Renee. Thank you so very much. Meanwhile, Arthur says, sometimes I entertain such fantasies of being a rich man. If I had $500 million, you know, won the Powerball, as you say, I'd buy a few acres and build my own home, and I'd go to school, and I'd tour Europe and Africa and South America for some months, and I'd pour money into the Horn and several other progressive talk channels, and I'd start Union Mart, my co-op version of Walmart, and I'm not interested in private jets or cars that cost as much as houses. Of course, it is a fantasy, and yes, something like that kind of wealth might destroy me. People want to have enough money so they don't ever have to worry about money. Of course, the Kochs are not celebrities, and they could walk the streets without being recognized by most people. That's the kind of privilege I'd like to hold in my fantasy. And probably most rich people are not celebrities, and they like that. Take care. And Arthur closes saying, it's not a pond, Kincaid. It's a series of puddles. Now get off my lawn. There we go. Yeah. It's a series of puddles, damn it. Darlene, question. Why is the most favored nation trading status conferred on China by Clinton permanent and, I assume, irreversible? Republicans never view any law passed by Democrats as permanent. They're always reversing things and trashing accepted law. Well, that's true, but I mean that's you know it's Byzantine stuff that's all tied up with the State Department and look, there's money in it. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, if there's money changing hands, a Republican is all for it unless it also is related to having a clean environment. For instance, the tourism economy in Utah is a vastly greater economic engine than whatever coal or uranium or timber or gas or oil that they torture out of that magnificent earth. The tourism potential of Appalachia is far greater than the value of whatever coal and gas they can torture out of the earth. But the Republicans don't necessarily have a death grip on that particular industry, and it's too diffuse. There are too many people partaking of the wealth generated there. They like their wealth concentrated in a few small hands, you know, like oil companies and coal companies and gas companies and pharmaceutical companies. So, you know, if at some point in time, I don't have the statute or the regs in front of me, you know, if China did something, I'm sure there are caveats inside the way that most favored nation trading status is defined. That, you know, if they did something that, you know, if they wound up being directly at war with us, you know, we'd stop trading with them. But that's one of the reasons we'll never go to war with them until they decide it's time for us to bend a knee to them. Because we can't afford to. Practically everything the United States needs on a daily basis is coming over on boats. It was years and years and years ago now, all the way back to the bad old days of terrestrial radio, when for the first time the United States didn't produce the majority of its own food. And I looked at that and went, that's frightening. Because when a nation can't feed itself, a nation is in trouble.
Yeah, but you go to the produce section of a grocery store and look at all the produce grown in Mexico.
Yeah, and Chilean grapes and strawberries and that kind of shit drives me batty. That means we're putting grapes and okay, I understand coffee. There's only one state in the U.S. that can grow coffee. That's Hawaii. Hawaii cannot supply the United States with coffee. That's the kind of stuff. That's why you trade. But it's capitalism that wants to provide grapes in January when you don't necessarily need grapes in January. I mean, we all love our preserves and stuff on an English muffin or a biscuit or toast or whatever. Well, they're called preserves because that was the way you preserved fruit so that you could have it in the non-bearing seasons. But no more, because we're willing to help roast the planet to make sure that that I can get Chilean grapes in West Virginia in February, and to make sure that some dude in Las Vegas can have a lobster dinner that was flown in from Maine. It's insanity. And it does also come with a reckoning. Sounds like you've got the jet up and running, Sparky.
Oh, you can hear that? I thought the microphone was muted.
Oh, no, I mean, but when the mic's not muted, I can hear it. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, I got it right. I got it's my version of an SR-71 J-57 engine.
Not quite shaking the walls, though, is it?
No. But the flameage looks the same coming out of it as the back of a fucking jet engine.
There are flames? I guess there would have to be.
On an SR-71? There is.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the SR-71. I'm talking about your propane heater.
Yeah, there's flames.
There are flames on my car. Great line from the In-Laws.
It's a flame, a circle flame. I mean, it's you know, it blows. And yeah, anyway. Sorry it's so loud.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
But the only reason I noticed is I was buying a lime today, and there's a big sock on the 3 for a buck, and it said Mexico on it.
Oh, yeah.
So you just the daily little blurbs, things you see, they just kind of make a register mark on you.
Bob!
There he is.
There he is.
Hey, I got to get out of here. Karen's hurt her leg. I got to go help her out, man.
Oh, damn. I hope she's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's a shame because
I love you guys.
Oh, man, have a happy holiday. It's a shame you got to get out.
Merry Christmas, Steve.
It's a shame you got to get out early. I was going to give you shit for drinking Budweiser with those yummy crabs.
Well, you can do it Monday. I'll be here Monday, so just put it on hold.
All right. You
All
take
right,
care.
Thanks, guys. All right, take care now.
Speaking of giving shit, Bob, I know that we're sort of ragging on Scott for not watching The Big Lebowski, but I must confess I've only seen parts of the movie, not the whole thing.
Oh, now it comes out.
Yeah, I know. I was holding back. What can I say? I feel kind of bad for Scott, though. I feel like he's being teamed up on, so I'll climb up on that cross and nail myself right in, you know?
You gotta watch it every couple of years.
Yeah, is it on Netflix?
It's on the internet.
It's on HBO on demand. I can tell you that.
Okay, I'll just type it in. I have a smart TV now, so I can.
Now, for me, most people, it's not even on most people's Christmas movie list, but it's damn sure on mine. The Lion in Winter.
Oh, that's a good one.
The whole thing is set at Christmas.
Right, right. Is that about Sir Thomas More and that
no.
and Henry VIII
no.
and Henry, so forth? Or?
No.
Oh.
No, it's the 12th century, and it's about the struggle for power in the waning days of the reign of Henry II.
Oh, okay.
As played by Peter O'Toole and his incredibly powerful ahead of her time wife, Eleanor of Aquitaine, as played by Catherine Hepburn.
Okay.
And Anthony Hopkins is in it, you know.
Okay.
Timothy Dalton, when he was just a baby, plays the newly crowned King of France.
Oh. Hmm.
But it's yeah, and to the extent that. At Thanksgiving and Christmas, families tend to, sooner or later, descend into chaos and argument. That's the perfect film.
It's, I mean, yeah. Who are the Republicans and who are the Democrats in that film, right?
Well, I don't know that you can split it out that way.
I know, Bob. I'm saying, you know, yeah.
You just got a note from Brother Deacon Asa, who says, I don't know if we can consider you a member of the family anymore, Billable Rick.
Oh, my God.
So now we're going to have to impose. It's just going to be everybody else has their purity stuff. You're just going to have to watch the damn movie all the way through this weekend. Sorry.
I guess I'm on probation. I'm on probation, right?
I mean, you just got to do it.
Can I join the front porch on Christmas Day if I don't watch it or not?
Well, you can. You can.
Do I have to banish myself?
But you know what? Maybe you and maybe you and Scott need to communicate, and you can both turn it on at the same time.
Oh,
and,
there you go.
And watch it together, 200 miles apart.
That would be kind of cool.
How far is it from L.A. to San Diego?
Oh, not quite. It's about 90 miles, but it's about 3 hours drive just because of all the traffic you get, you know?
Maybe you just need to drive down to Scott's.
Maybe I just need to go to one of those video stores and just rent it on a DVR.
Yeah, take a nice... I think Scott likes a vodka martini at Christmas, and maybe take a bag of bird seed for Punky and a little something for Chirps the cat, and just sit down and get it done.
There you go. Well, that's an idea. Or we could just do it virtually as well. Comment on the movie via email as we're going along,
Right.
Yeah.
Although, it's not really a Christmas movie, but
it's a classic. I mean, Christmas and the holidays are for any good movies. Like if you want to watch like Lawrence of Arabia or Ben-Hur or whatever, during the holidays, those are great movies to watch,
There's that.
But there's nothing like the dude.
No, there's not. So let's see, Alma with a note. Big Lebowski. I didn't watch all of the movie, but. I do really like Kahlua, I noticed. The dude really likes his Kahlua, I noticed. Have a wonderful week, Canada. Calm, calm Christmas, says Alma. Kahlua's part of it, the half and half.
I got some of that in my fridge that is just waiting there to be drunk,
Kahlua, vodka, half and half, you go.
That's what I'll do. I better get some Tito's vodka. And get some ginger beer and make some Moscow mules and have extra for the for the Kahlua and cream, and maybe throw a little vodka in there,
Well, yeah, you got it. That's what makes it a Russian. A white Russian is half and half and Kahlua and vodka.
Right.
I used to drink a lot of them back during my bar hopping days.
Oh, yeah. It's a good drink. It's a good drink. So, what's going on up in Northern Cal? Is it cold there, Sparky? I assume it is, huh?
We got down to 34 degrees last night.
Oh, yeah, it got down to probably the high 30s, low 40s up in my foothills. So, yeah.
I don't know what it is today.
Yeah. Tonight. I just hope we get some rain to put that Thomas fire out. That sucker is burning like crazy still, I think, I was scheduled to go to a client's Christmas party up near Montecito, which is just maybe 5 miles south of Santa Barbara, 5 to 7 miles south of Santa Barbara, and I looked at the map of the Thomas Fire, and it basically stretches, along the coast from just north of Oxnard all the way up to where he was. In Montecito, it had actually reached that far north and also tens of miles inland. And the only area where it didn't burn was in the very center. There's a little kind of an oval shaped valley. It's called the Ojai Valley, which is kind of an arts and, kind of an artsy fartsy sort of, historic valley. And somehow the firefighters were able to steer the flames away from there. But everything else is scorched, and I didn't really feel contending with a lot of smoke and maybe fires that were maybe only 2-3 miles away from my client's house, So plus I love that area. I didn't want to have to see it be burned, right now anyway. You know,
I saw a picture of the burn scar this morning on the internet.
Oh yeah,
with the, in the lower part.
Yeah.
On there, just scorched. Kind of reminded me what happened to Redding.
It happened. Oh, that's right.
The hills around Redding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about 2008.
That was like in May it happened?
No, 2008 it happened.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying. My son was going to school up there at the time. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
That was the summer we had 1,200 dry lightning strikes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fires everywhere.
Yeah, that's scary shit. I mean, you know, I think this is the new normal, unfortunately. You know, we're going to, you know, California's going to stay as dry as a tinderbox, and those areas that haven't burned are at risk, you know? All it takes is somebody carelessly throwing a cigarette butt out of their car or some crazy pyromaniac on a motorcycle setting fires. I mean, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea who, you know, how these started, but, you know, the conditions are just so prime for, you know, major conflagrations.
One big fire up here started by a guy. Trailer chain was dragging on the asphalt.
Really?
Putting out sparks.
And oh,
he just went up the driving up the road. It's in South Reading, Happy Valley.
Oh no!
And it just started fires all along the road, and then it just took off.
Oh jeez. Ugh.
All right, well, guys, I'm gonna go ahead and knock off. Ferg standing by here.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna mute the group. Thanks for joining in. Thanks again all year long, Sparky. Thanks all year long for running this front porch. I guess we'll be talking on Monday evening, right?
Yeah. I'll just have my stepson over here. That's all.
Okay. Well, but I mean, if you need,
yeah, I got a small fat family gathering coming tonight.
Right. Right. I know that. We'll. Just let me know either way. I can run it too if you've got family going.
Yeah.
So that's
it'll be the bulk of the family unit will be gone, and my stepson is just staying here because he's recovering from neck surgery.
Oh wow! Oh God! I hope that's going well. All right, then. Happy holidays to everybody. And
yes, you too, Bob.
Enjoy the film this weekend, Rick. I'm kidding.
I will. Actually, it's on my list. I don't do resolutions, but I'll do this just for the group. I'll take one for the team here.
Oh, and Kid Mark, thanks for jumping into the group this evening. I really appreciate it. It's good to have new folks wander in from time to time. So the reason we do this is because. Because we've been doing this since just about they were old enough to read. And it used to be, I think there were a couple where it was all four of the kids. And then for a while it was the three youngest. And now we're down to one. So I'll get it all. It makes for a nice little time capsule sort of thing. Because they're all there in the archives. Whichever program is nearest to Christmas Day is the one that has the kids reading in it. And we always do it the same way, because that's what makes for tradition. So I'll mute my mic, and I will hot up Ferg's. We'll get the music going, and here it is, the second chapter of Luke. Of course, from the King James Version, because God speaks Elizabethan English, and we all know it. Happy holidays, everybody.
And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. And he was to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you, ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary, and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all that they heard, it wandered those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart.
And there you have it. I wish to you all the happiest of holiday seasons. No matter what religious tradition or no religious tradition. Because again, of course, the season is the reason, not the other way around. But for Agnes and Ferg and me and Doodle and Margie and Laura and the babies, our entire family, to you, all of you, who create the Horn Family Community Congregation, a joyful time, a peaceful time, a 2018 better than 2017, our respect, our admiration, and our love. And of course, to our all-volunteer staff, thanks, Sparky, Steve, News Ninja Gene, John Fox, Ben Birch, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, to all of you who share, as I say every night, who share your precious, finite time in this little adventure called life, our thanks. And to those of you who make it possible for this program to continue night after night for more than a dozen years now, our most profound thanks. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Happy weekend. Happy holidays.